It's the Rule of Threes podcast. I'm Chris Grace.
And I'm Casey Lawrence.
It is episode 3, and we're doing playoff reactions, Casey.
I mean, we are underway.
Yeah. It's exciting. I'm enjoying these playoffs a lot.
Yeah, me too.
I'm enjoying the sort of momentary Icarus-like rises of veteran players out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm actually kind of enjoying, last week I was like, you know, did I say the Pacers are like Spurs East or
I mean,
Boston
was
like Spurs
East? We said every single team was Spurs East.
But I am enjoying watching like college-like teams sort of just assault these older teams with their like relentless systems.
Okay.
And yeah. Watching these old players sort of like pale in comparison sometimes.
Okay. So
the last game I watched was Thunder Utah.
And oh man, it is so fun to watch Utah pull it together against the Thunder because yeah. It just shows you what it's like when a team is made up of really good players like the Thunder have, like three really good players.
Mm-hmm.
Which is Steven Adams, Westbrook, and Paul George. Notice I didn't count Carmelo. and to like go up against a team where Utah's got, you know, some really good players too, but they play those players in a way that just is suffocating on defense. Like they have just been wrecking Oklahoma against.
I think it's a combination of it's suffocating on defense, but also they have a shitty offense.
They do.
I mean, I watched last night's game, and I was just like, I don't even understand what you guys are doing. That game and the Cleveland Pacers game looked like YMCA games.
Wow. That's quite...
on one end of the court.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to watch these teams that, you know, if... It's just like, if it was going better, then... you'd know that these teams would be, you know, they'd be clicking, and when they're clicking, they look good. You know, you watch some of those games where Oklahoma City is making shots and getting out in transition. They look like a team that you can't beat, mm-hmm. right? They had a run in the middle of the season that was out of control.
Mm.
And just watching them go up against somebody that stymies them in a way that they're not used to, you know, consistent defensive schemes, not failing to rotate or to close out, those kinds of things, the things that Utah does, you know, with Gobert at the rim, you just don't want to go in there. And, and watching them kind of like be like, okay, well, we don't have any way to get around this. It's so fascinating to watch them just butt their heads up against something and be like, I don't know what to do. Let's isolate. Let's try to pick and roll and not do a great job at it.
It devolved into Paul George, Westbrook, and Melo just all on the 3-point line, making like one move and being like, well, he defended me. I guess I'll pass it to Paul now. And now he'll try a move.
Yeah, that's tough.
There was a series in the sequence in the fourth quarter when it finally just was over where Paul George had a horrible stretch of just like turnover, basically like getting like stymied by Ingles.
Yeah.
Over and over. Of course, you were probably like, good, he's coming to LA.
It's what I want. It's what I want. And I feel very, very sad that I went back on my Utah prediction in the last podcast because I thought Donovan Mitchell was going to be injured, you know, to a point where he wasn't
going to be able
to play.
I think that's fair, though. I mean, he doesn't seem to be. He definitely didn't. He's not playing as well.
Yeah,
the rest of the team is playing.
Everybody on that team, you know, they all scored in double digits, the starters, and they rolled them, and it was really, really cool to see.
Speaking of stymied by defenses. Uh-huh. Damian Lillard.
Oh boy, are we?
You picked New Orleans.
I did.
So
I did.
You picked them in seven.
I'm not going to say that I am like that. I thought that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
But I mean, holy crap! That was out of control. I mean, wow.
I mean, I think not many people watched the Pelicans over the. I mean, I don't know how many Pelicans games you saw this year.
I mean, I saw. I don't know, maybe four. Five Pelicans,
and I don't know how many people really watched Drew Holiday over the season.
I mean, even if you watched Drew Holiday over the season, it's not like this Drew Holiday was that Drew Holiday. That
mm-hmm.
I mean, he played better this season, and part of that was because they took him off the point. You know, he played that combo guard role, you mm-hmm. know, kind of a guard slash wing, and it was really truly a season where he didn't have to do the things that he was doing in the past for
right
them. And he's taken it to another level in the postseason.
I mean, the coaching you mentioned something like similar to this in a text to me, which is maybe coaching is just don't make your guys do things that they aren't good at.
Yeah. And when you like find, and you know, Rondo today was saying that his key to success, because everybody, you know, gets on playoff Rondo. Everybody loves playoff Rondo, which, you know, I think we both are not fans of Rondo. Yeah. but what he said was, he said that watching film is something that a team should do together, so that the team can know what
everyone's thinking.
Well, not just what they're thinking, but what people are good at and what people aren't good at. It's not just a coaching thing.
Oh,
it's a thing where everybody on the team needs to be
right.
Aware
he shouldn't be putting people in. He shouldn't be kicking out to a 3-pointer to someone that isn't comfortable doing that.
Yeah, well, you know, just know like this is what the guys should be doing when they are on the court, and having, if everybody knows that, that's a very, very good thing for what your team can and can't do. And I mean it. Showed, and
yeah,
they swept the floor with them. Like, there were, one game was close out of the four.
The last game was, are you talking about the last game?
The last game was like, you know, they were up by 10 for most of the
quarter. Mean, I guess they had a shot at winning that last game. They were sort of into it. They were sort of around 3 points down for about 6 or 7 minutes in the fourth quarter.
Okay.
And then, but just never were it was able to do it. And Lillard never really like took over.
It was very hard.
One of the games.
Very hard to watch Damian Lillard just kind of not play well.
Yeah.
And I think you can give a lot of that credit to Jrue Holiday.
Well, this is what I was surprised by, was afterwards he was like, they were covering me in a way that I've never seen these defensive schemes before. And I was just thinking about like for example, the Pelicans cannot run those same schemes against Curry. You can, but they're not going to stymie him. You can't double team Curry. And like, I was watching YouTube clips of double teams on Curry.
Yeah.
And basically like he handles them fine. Like
he does,
just moves the ball.
And he's able to pass the ball to somebody else who's a much better shooter than the people that Damian Lillard is passing to.
Exactly. I mean, not only does he have Clay and KD as outlets, but he has Draymond as the like release valve.
Yeah.
Who Draymond often makes an incredible, or not even an incredible, sometimes just a very simple, useful pass as the next pass. They were doing similar things to Victor Oladipo, these sort of double teams that were sometimes very like slow coming to him. And someone on Reddit was just like, does Victor know that he can pass the ball before the double team gets there?
Before there are two guys who are crowding him in a box on the sideline.
Yeah, a lot of times he would like allow them to come to him. And I was just thinking about how the Pelicans, I think it's an amazing, it's a testament to their defensive intensity, but also I was puzzled by the fact that like Damian Lillard has never seen double teams before in his life. Like he must have been double teamed all through high school and college. Like,
I mean, you know, in high school and college, those people are not people who can keep up with your foot speed and you can dribble circles around. You
That's
know,
true.
If he hasn't been double teamed at this level, I think it might just be that it was double team. Yes. But also length and also athleticism that like, he wasn't able to get around these guys because he you know, he gets around people.
Yeah.
Damian Lillard's got handles. He can pass. He can
split double teams.
It just, you know, he took it to a level. New Orleans took it to a level that he wasn't prepared for. And I think he's gonna spend a lot of time this offseason working on trying to get through that kind of stuff. Because,
well, I mean, a horrific series for his reputation, I would say.
Yeah.
And if Jrue Holiday could play the rest of the playoffs near, like, I forgot. I wanted to look up what Jrue Holiday's like averages were.
Okay,
but like, Jrue Holiday will probably be like an all defense team, or you know, first. Is there a second team for all defense?
There is a second team.
I bet he'll be on one of those. But if he was able to score at the same level,
I don't know if he'll be on that for the season.
He'll be close.
I don't know. I mean,
it'll be Chris Paul.
The voting's already in.
That's what I mean. Like, he had an okay reputation as a defender.
Yeah, he's not going to be on that.
Chris Paul always just gets on by default.
I mean, it's partially by default and partially that every number backs him up as being a fantastic defender. And people talk about him like he's a fantastic defender. I think that all the things add up to him being a fantastic defender. Yeah.
I mean, you know? I guess it's the same reasons why Kobe made so many all defensive teams. He was a great defender.
You're gonna get me for this. I don't know if Kobe should have been on all those all defensive teams.
I bet he should have been on some of them. But I guess defensive teams in general just work on reputation. Once you get on two, like, you're pretty much the first choice of people because of what we mentioned before. Like, no one seems to know how to measure defense.
Giannis just did something crazy, y'all.
Yeah. Oh, we have the we have the Bucks Celtics on. I'm looking up Drew Holiday. I just want to see if for some reason I went to the Sixers page. I went to the Sixers page. Yeah. He used to be a Sixer.
He did. That was the that was the trade. That was the trade that got them Nerlens Noel, right?
Oh boy.
I can't remember. It was one of those draft day trades where he went down to New Orleans.
Talk about another game while I look this up.
I got to talk about the Sixers and the Heat. Hoo boy.
Well, I love these kind of games.
Those two teams, you know, the playoffs breeds a lot of animosity, and these teams have got it in spades. I mean, they already had it coming in. They didn't like each other because of the Embiid-Whiteside stuff.
Yeah.
They really, really don't like each other. And it is very fun to watch them play. You know, you get a game where, you know, it feels so silly that a team that relies so much on Bellinelli and Ilyasova is doing what they're doing to a team in Miami in the playoffs. They went down to Miami and they won both games.
Mm-hmm.
They took them out of it in the fourth quarter, in a way where they came back yesterday in the Saturday game, game four, and then it just like Embiid and Simmons they took over. God, do you see some of Embiid's blocks? Yes. Live for those blocks. They're so fun.
That I would say is the most impressive thing about them, and the thing that I would say is the most encouraging if you're a Sixers fan about the future rounds is that they've had a fourth quarter gear that is kind of like a veteran gear.
Yeah.
It's a thing you'd expect from the Warriors or something.
It's the thing that, you know, you learn from the process. That's the you got to trust the process.
It's important. It's especially impressive because they don't have any playoff experience.
As a team, they don't have any playoff experience. Yes, but they got plenty of guys on that team who have played deep into the playoffs.
Ben and Joel.
Yeah, the people who are playing the best. Yeah. Don't have. I mean,
Ben seems to just have a composure that's like impressive.
It was very funny to watch. Him and James Johnson go at it yesterday in that fight, you know, fight, NBA fight.
Right.
But you know, he was just like, all Simmons did was just go,
I'm appreciating Ben Simmons as an NBA person because I'm going to enjoy watching him play. And I'm also going to enjoy watching him get clocked at some point.
I think people are going to like him, but I don't know. Maybe people are pissed at him.
Like veterans? I think that veterans generally don't respect rookies.
Yeah, that's fair.
And especially someone who's – both of them are pretty cocky.
Yeah.
So, however, I think they're playing to play the winner of this series, right?
Boston, yes, they are.
So that'll be fascinating. I think a Boston Sixers series would be more interesting if they had their better players. Yes. I'd love to see like a full Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid versus Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving series would be great.
Yeah.
But it will still be interesting to see Brad Stevens if he gets to coach against, to see what they do, how they scheme against certain guys like Simmons.
Yeah.
Although at this point, it's not a given that they're going to get out of this series.
No, not at all. I mean, I would still think that they will, but you know, I mean, if you're going to play this poorly on the road, which they played really badly in game three, and they probably, they got to put something together to get back in this game four. They're already down 12
in the second
halftime.
So this is how few Bucks games I have watched this year. I thought the Chris Middleton that made 3 point to tie it the other day was the old Chris Middleton. Or what was his name? The guy,
Michael Red?
No, the guy that was like married to a Kardashian.
Oh my God, Chris Humphries.
Oh, Chris Humphries. I thought that was Chris Humphries the whole time.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Yeah. No.
Sometimes people's names in the NBA, if you don't watch all the games and you just see the names, sometimes they seem like they're generated by NBA 2K.
Okay.
So when I, like, there's a few, especially there's other like Jabaris and there's other, anyway, Chris Middleton was one that I was like, I didn't know who this guy was until this series.
Oh my God. Yeah. He's been balling out for them for almost 8 years now. Middleton, he's been around. He's the old head on that team.
By the way, I looked up Jrue Holiday's season stats.
Talk to me.
He got,
can I guess?
Sure.
16 points, 5 rebounds and 5 assists, 1 steal, half a block, 4 turnovers.
So wait, how many assists did you say?
I said 5 assists.
So he had 6 assists.
Okay.
How many rebounds?
I said 5 rebounds.
4.5.
Okay.
He had 19 points.
Oh, 19 points a game. Hey, that's really
so
good.
So this is a 19-6-5 line, basically. That's, I mean, with this notoriety, if he averages 20 a game next year,
yeah,
I think he's like, he should be elevated.
Okay. So we're talking Jrue, if he keeps it up, should be an all-star?
I mean, I think that if you, in a playoff series, if you shut down Lillard, you should rise in stature. It depends on if he can keep it up. So if he has a similar, especially if he has a really good, like let's say he averages 25 points against the Warriors and shuts down one of them. Like, let's say he neutralizes Clay, basically.
Yeah.
I think his stature should rise.
Okay. So those stats, that's Clay Thompson's stats, right?
Yeah.
19-5-5, that's what he averages.
Yeah.
Basically. You know,
when do you ever talk about Jrue Holiday as being even close to being an all-star? Like,
yeah. I mean, you know, I think Jrue probably has a lower true shooting percentage, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, his usage is probably the same.
I bet it compares okay to Goran Dragic's stats.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, if we're talking about all the guys who got kicked off of Team LeBron for being injured and getting down to, like, Goran Dragic level, like, they were really, who are we going to get?
Well, I remember when they were, you know, everybody was whining that they weren't on the All-Star team this year.
Yeah.
And he was one of them. Yeah. And I remember just when he said that, I was like, what? Like, no, you're not even close. And then he ended up on it. But, thank you for mentioning LeBron.
Hey.
I watched the entire Cavaliers-Pacers game.
Yes.
Did you watch that?
I watched the first half, and then I watched parts of the second half.
Oh, you missed the good half.
I missed the half where the Cavaliers pulled a, oh, God, what are we doing? What's going on?
Well, this is why I think that the Pacers have a good shot at winning this series.
Okay.
In the second half, That was the game that most reminded me of a YMCA game.
Okay.
Because basically it was like, you and I go play a YMCA game, and we just want to enjoy ourselves.
Oh, I'm just having so much
fun.
We want to
play half court. We don't want to play full court.
Oh, no, of course. Why would I want to run up and down the court? I just want to make some passes. And
then these, like, 20-year-old kids come in, and they already have a squad. And they're like, we have next. And they're like, hey, no one's using the other half of the court. Let's play full court. That's what the second half of that game looked like.
And I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, when is my mom coming to pick me up from the YMCA?
And we're just like, well, let's see if we can win this game just by shooting three-pointers or like doing like low effort offense or letting one of us isolate. And then when it doesn't go in, we just like walk back to the other side as they like run. That's what the whole second half looked like. And I think that like just the springiness of the Pacers, the bounciness and responsiveness to every single loose ball, every like – their just active nature, I think Cleveland can win the series, but as much randomness goes into things, the Pacers are better equipped to just take advantage of every single one of those 50-50 situations.
Also, give me more Bogdanovich.
Yeah,
give
of course.
Me so much more Bogdanovich doing some LeBron shutdown, doing some three-point ridiculousness, going crazy, layups. Acrobatic.
I mean, that's an all-time great performance from a player because he guarded LeBron single coverage the entire second half, like, and did pretty well. Like, LeBron made one shot in the third quarter, Even if they make it out of the series, they're not going anywhere, that team.
No. And you can tell because it doesn't feel like they're playing for each other. It doesn't feel like they're playing for themselves. You get these great games from LeBron that are great in the first half and okay in the second half.
Yeah.
And he's running out of steam, and it's really apparent. And it's tough to watch a little. It's hard it's not hard for you to watch because you love.
No, I love it. Love watching LeBron. Him walk up the court as Bogdanović hits a 3-pointer.
God, I love LeBron. I'll always say that. I think LeBron is a great player. I love watching him play, and it bums me out to see him on a team that doesn't feel like they want to be there. That nobody feels like they want to be doing what they're doing.
Well, this is what I would say about LeBron career-wise. Okay. Is how often there's a shelf life on how long people want to play with him. Like,
yes, I think we've seen that. And
has not inspired even a Powell Kobe connection, or I feel like okay, let's say Jordan was hard to play with, but he won at a level that everybody basically was ride or die with him. LeBron lives in this other sort of doesn't win quite enough to justify his I don't know. People were saying today, Richard Jefferson just clarified, there's no bad blood between Kyrie and LeBron. That's why Kyrie left. Or, LeBron had nothing to do with Kyrie leaving, right?
Okay.
And it's sure, there wasn't bad blood, but there wasn't goodwill. Where he was I need to stay with this guy. You know, we're teammates. We're the perfect backcourt.
Yeah.
Or,
Yeah.
1-2 combo.
Yeah.
So people seem to, there's a little bit of as long as we're winning, we're all cool. There isn't a ton of let's struggle through the difficult times. Also, the roster, he's had a lot of influence on the roster.
Yeah. It feels they've tried to under their, really tight constraints salary cap wise build a team around him, and it's hard because they don't have the ability to go out and get those guys that would really compliment him,
and they seem to have overpaid his friends.
Oh yeah, I mean, that J.R. Smith contract is a disaster. And Tristan, you were gonna kind of have to pay him that much no matter what. He was gonna get that money from somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're gonna get it from somebody and you don't have any way to replace him, you're kind of stuck. That's the restricted free agency, real bummer of a game. And it's just hard. That's a hard thing. I mean, it's a hard thing to build a team around somebody who eats up 35% of your salary cap.
Yeah.
You don't have any guarantees that he's going to be there long term. That's a tough thing, and I don't envy them for having to try to build that around him. But I mean,
they did it
for 3 years with him coming back.
Yeah, right?
He's been back. This is his fourth year back. Fourth year back, and it's just this might be all they can do. They're at this place, and they have these players that can't take it to that level because either they don't care to because they're tired of playing with LeBron, or they just don't have the ability to against a team that is much hungrier.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they don't have a great team culture. That might be Gilbert as well.
Yeah.
Because ooh, I feel like
Chris Humphries with a three.
Chris Humphries. I don't know why it confused me. I mean, they look so similar.
Yeah, they're basically twins.
I realized last night we'll get to that in a second. I realized that a player looks like somebody else.
Okay.
And it wasn't that CJ McCollum looks like Urkel.
Okay, all right. NBA doppelgangers.
A long time ago, I was like, who does Robert Horry look like? And it was Will Smith.
Yes, yeah, that's a good call.
But CJ McCollum does look like Urkel.
Okay.
So I'm enjoying the Pacers series. Oladipo didn't have a great game, but while I was watching it and thinking about who has bounce, the thing is that the bounciest Cavalier players are former Lakers.
Yeah, and bounce with it.
And they aren't super executing at a super high level.
No, they are not. Anytime you join a team midseason, it's very hard to do that.
Yeah, with no practices.
Yeah.
But Larry Nance and Jordan Clarkson do have probably the most energy on that team. And don't sort of have an old man basketball.
I feel like Osman has a lot of energy, but they barely get
on the court. Yeah. So I don't know. It doesn't bode well for the Cavaliers.
No, I mean, I'm fully expecting LeBron to come out and score 55 points.
Yeah, right? But they might still lose.
They might, but I think, you know.
I'm a little tired of the LeBron has no help thing in terms of the, like, he's dragging his team to whatever. Because I think this year, if they lose in the first round, it's like, great, you drag them to a first round exit. Like, ooh, that doesn't mean anything. So did Damian Lillard.
Here's what it means. It means bye-bye Cleveland. Hello, wherever LeBron wants to go.
I think that he probably is leaving unless they win a championship.
I mean, if they win a championship, he might still leave.
Yeah.
Like, why would you come back? Why would you come back to that?
Okay, I have a prediction where he's going to go.
Okay.
So a couple weeks ago, I said he was going to stay in the East. I think the problem with the East is that I don't think there's great destinations for him. I don't think he's going to go to the Sixers because that's too much like a KD move in terms of...
I can definitely see him on the Sixers.
I just don't think he will in terms of... I feel like a lot... He functions on narrative a lot. So I will say... I think he will go to the same place I thought he should have gone to last time.
Oh.
Which is the Spurs.
Whoa. So
last time he was, when he did the decision, I believe the forward at the Spurs was Richard Jefferson.
Okay.
And I was like, if he went there, he would sit in that small forward, power forward position with Popovich and just destroy.
Popovich, dunk. I mean, I'm just imagining Parker, Ginobili, James, Duncan, and then whatever scrap heap center they would have. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That would have been so fun.
Yeah. So basically, my philosophy is going to San Antonio for him would be going to like basketball heaven. So not the most fun city to go to, mm-hmm. maybe. I guess. Yeah. I mean, whatever.
But what does LeBron care about going to a fun city? LeBron's a dad.
That's right.
It's dad LeBron now. LeBron just wants to make sure that Bronny Jr.
Mm-hmm.
and Bryce and Jury. That's right. I know LeBron's kids' names.
Malia and Sasha.
All he wants is to just be a good dad, make sure that they're like taken care of and play basketball. Like the dude doesn't care about like the nightlife.
Yeah.
He does care about like business opportunities, entertainment opportunities.
Yeah, no, I know. That's why LA is like,
that's why it seems like it makes sense, but he can do that from anywhere. We have this thing. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called the internet.
Yeah. I don't understand the,
he travels around when he's in season. He doesn't have to stay there. It makes no sense.
People slightly overestimate the big market, small market stuff. I think people care that much about going to the Knicks just because like they're a big market.
I mean, they're a big market and you got to get a really expensive apartment. You know, you got to live by Madison Square Garden.
I mean,
you know,
it's like Kevin Durant was in Oklahoma City, like, and he's a superstar.
Yeah.
Like,
and he went to a very small market in a little tiny San Francisco. You know, real, real small up in Oakland up there. It's a real small market.
but before
nobody
that,
lives up there. It's real cheap to go up there. It's very fun.
They get plenty of national games. But so that's because this is why I realized that when people make predictions, we need to make them a little more. The Pelican sweep has.
We got to be honest, okay? We got to be real honest about what we're making our predictions on.
Well, I think that people are too, especially because did you see the Reddit thing where it was like all 22 ESPN analysts picked?
I did.
The Trailblazers.
The Pelicans Twitter also saw that.
Yeah.
And they picked up on that. Ooh, there is a lot. I mean, I wonder how many people are going to pick them in the next series. Is it going to be zero again?
Yes, it will be zero. I mean,
that's the, you know, I wonder if you could make it all the way to the NBA finals while having no ESPN analyst
pick
predict
you.
I think that's the ultimate. Nobody believes in us.
Well,
all right.
One of the that's a real one, not the one Draymond was trying to be.
Man, nobody respects us because, you know, we only won 56 games this year.
Right. Every single analyst picked us, but I think that one of the themes of this podcast is that no one knows anything. So I'm not saying that we know anything.
Oh yeah, we know.
But
nothing.
I will say that people like Zach Lowe and et al. Don't know a lot more than we do because, you know, the majority of basketball people now are not guys that like get press passes and sit courtside and hear things players are saying to each other that don't get reported. And, you know, like on the ground journalism. a lot of them are this sort similar to us guys that are watching games on TV and like Googling stats. And the fact that like all 22 of them, like not a single one of them saw through that, like maybe the Pelicans would win.
Yeah.
Except
I mean,
my co-host Casey Lawrence.
Woohoo! I called it, baby. I mean, here's the thing. I was not like very strong about that prediction. I was like, I thought it could go either way.
Yeah.
And it certainly went one specific way, and it went that way real hard. And that's the thing, is that, you know, any prediction, and I think that even people who make the predictions, they know, right? These people know that they're making these predictions and they get them wrong all the time. Stuff goes wrong in predictions all the time because you just can't predict it.
Well, this is
what
this
way.
My issue with the predictions is I feel like the predictions are so of the moment because a lot of them were made like just after the Blazers had a big, you know, win streak. They're so of the moment that they're not like, or they did well in the last.
No, they had a real bad ending to their season.
But didn't they have a win streak like in the last month or something?
There was like their last 10 games, they went like 4-6 or like.
See, that's great, Casey. 4-6. That's what the Warriors did. But what I mean is like they're it's not like analysis necessarily. It's just like they feel so safe to me, and they don't feel like I don't feel like I'm getting more insight necessarily from these people.
But I'll
just bring up early preseason. There was an Andrew Sharp, I think Ben Tolliver podcast that was like, bet your mortgage on the Sixers not beating the over under for the season, and bet your mortgage on the Lakers not beating their over-under.
Ooh.
And they both did.
Oh,
and
wow.
The Sixers destroyed their over-under.
And the Lakers beat their over-under.
Yeah, they
too.
Beat it by one or two. Anyway, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I think that I don't think anybody stands by predictions in a way that, like, I mean, I don't know. I feel like predictions is just your best guess. And people put that on a lot of these guys. Like a lot of the when we read articles like this, mm-hmm. that's us putting on like, all right, these guys have these articles. They are the experts and they get it wrong. But like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say, all right, every single person who makes a prediction has got to be 100% right. You know,
I don't think these things,
they get page views, right?
It's
a way to get people to like read your opinions, and like every nuanced description of a prediction gets summarized down to one thing: who wins,
Blazers
how many games,
or whatever.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's probably a ton of insight that these people have that they're not getting to say because it's just pick one, baby. You got to pick one. That's all we're giving you.
I think that's true. But I also listened to a bunch of Ringer podcasts where the people made their picks, and they weren't a lot more nuanced than this.
I mean, you know, I love how nuanced we are. We're a nuanced duo. Okay?
Yeah.
I feel very nuanced. You know, we're back and forth. We're giving you the hot takes, but we're also giving you, you know, a little bit of like substance behind them. But I think that, you know, if people are making a prediction, I don't want to like hold them to a higher standard.
Well, I think they should be held. To a higher standard because they're getting paid. Like
wait,
we're doing.
Wait, hang on. I'm not getting paid. Wait a minute.
But and this is a hobby for us. You know, like this is not our first job. You know what I mean? So
correct.
Like it would be like if someone pays to come see me in a comedy show. I can't just be like, well, I'm about as good as that guy sitting in the audience.
I mean, honestly, you sound like the soccer mom from my first episode saying, they got to make their free throws because they're getting paid.
Well,
it's the same principle, right? You know, just because this prediction doesn't
work
out.
So a basketball player, I will say, doesn't have to make their free throws, but they do need to be able to score the ball better than a non-paid person should.
That's very true. Yeah, I'm there.
And I think that I don't necessarily care that people get their predictions right, but there's a groupthinky level that prediction that none of them picked it. There's a sort of echo chamber of like who's good
and
who's not.
Yes. Okay. I will say the echo chamber. That's I completely agree. I want to make sure that we try to do our best to avoid the echo chamber here, but also like you know, that I think is a valid point. Like if people are just saying, all right, there's only one way to look at this. There's only one way to see this.
I think that's the perceptions of the teams get calcified in a way of just like, well, it's just Anthony Davis and nobody else.
Well,
and,
I mean, and, you know. No joke. I said it's Anthony Davis and nobody else on the first episode.
And you did, but you thought they were going to win anyway.
I did think they were going to win because I was like best player. I think he's the best player. And I think this series proved me wrong that it's not him and nobody else.
Yeah.
It's him and Drew and Nikola Mirotic, who has had some really good games.
Yeah.
That, you know, I've said that, you know, they do get calcified and it's about, I mean, I think some of it is about acknowledging when you're wrong too, you know,
that's the other thing is very few of these guys actually follow up.
And yeah, that does not get, I do like the ones, Deadspin follows up every once in a while. Uh-huh. There is a,
I like Deadspin in general. Like I kind of like their tone,
yeah, it's especially a great tone. Such fun
when they are so dismissive of like Yankees or like, they have like gross the way they do their headlines sometimes. Or the other one that was like Justin Verlander took issue with something, and it was just at the end it was just like baseball's stupid.
Yes, I mean all of this is stupid, and that's why we love it. Is because it's so silly.
So this is the thing about the predictions is, and I think this is maybe skewed by the fact that I probably get more Ringer coverage than anything else.
Okay,
that the glibness of people's opinions and like, especially on Ringer podcasts, they'll say stuff just like, you know, well, apparently Nerlens Noel is just not good at basketball or something. Like they'll be very, they get to a point that's very glib and kind of gross, especially when they're making these predictions of just like, well, you know, like, you know, it's just New Orleans and, you know, Dame's a killer and, they got no chance or whatever. And it just feels so unconsidered.
Yeah. Yes. I agree. It feels unconsidered. Also, it feels like the type of strong opinions that dominate sports media today.
Yeah, that's right? True.
And that is something that I think we can change. And I think that people do try to change. There are people who,
I mean, I have lots of strong opinions, but they're mostly about how I feel about certain players.
Yeah.
Not about, I don't, yeah. I mean, like, I think Westbrook is clearly a very talented player. I'm glad that I don't root for him because he seems like such a punk sometimes.
Okay, all right. I'm trying to think what my hottest player take is who I don't like. It's tough for me because I like most players.
You will think of it because we're going to talk about hot takes about Rockets Timberwolves.
Ooh.
This is what I realized. Jimmy Butler looks like Jamie Foxx. And I think that he actually has the charisma to, if he wanted to be an actor, like if he wanted a Dennis Rodman style career, he could, because
he does takes
to the camera that are like so charming, you know, like they'll catch him slow motion, like leaving the court from a timeout and he's just smiling at somebody. And it's like, whoa, he's got like charisma.
He's got it. And he's a funny dude.
Yeah.
He's a funny dude. Every interview he does is like funny and delightful. I think there are a lot of funny dudes in the NBA. Like,
yeah, that's Joel's funny.
Joel's hilarious. You know who else is really funny? Steven Adams.
Yeah.
Steven Adams is a funny dude who is just chill as hell. I love that guy.
But yeah, Jimmy Butler, I think, is very funny. I think, here's a hot take. I think Thibs is... I've decided he's not a good coach.
Okay, all right. We're three games into the playoffs
because they had a huge lead.
He's a bad coach.
They had an 18-point lead or something like that, and it was a combination of they were lucky to hold on to that lead.
Okay,
because they didn't play with a ton of composure.
Yeah,
they didn't play. This is my theory. I would like a coach to put this in. If you're up by 18 with like 4 minutes left, I think that you should. This is like those football teams where they're like, we never punt. We always go for it. There should be a mathematical equation where you're like, we're up by this much with this much time left. We're going to dribble over half court and hold it till the 24-second clock runs out. And then like let them restart.
You're messing with people's money.
Because.
Can't do that.
With their stats, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, we put in a bench player who doesn't mind doing this.
That bench player needs those stats too.
Well, here's the thing. I did math at one point, which is basically like, you're taking 24 seconds off the clock. At like, if the other team wants to come down and score in 6 seconds or whatever, maybe that's fine. But basically, like, every two possession exchange is 30 seconds minimum,
okay,
if not more. And that's assuming they score. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to like map out, like, if you have 18 point lead, yeah, you can kill the whole entire clock and win the game.
You know, stuff never happens that's crazy. Like, I don't know, Tracy McGrady scoring, you know, 13 points in 11 yeah, seconds.
But that happens when people try to run an offense and are passing the ball around.
I mean, you know, that's that happens. Two teams on the court here. There's an offense and a defense.
Yeah.
You know, you try to get it up the court. Sometimes that doesn't work. You know, you don't put in your best players in a game when it really matters. Like, there is definitely some way to do this, but it's not that way.
Wait, so let me put it this way. Maybe I wouldn't have the Golden State Warriors do that.
Okay.
But with the Tom Thibodeau offense,
yeah,
I'd rather them run out the 24-second clock.
Okay, now we get to the meat here. Because you think that their offense is so bad and weird that they... It's just weird. And the players that run it don't run it in a way that can lead them to close out a game.
And they throw the ball around. So if... Again, I don't care if you score. If you move the ball around... And like Utah was doing a good job of this.
Okay.
Move the ball around until there's like 6 seconds left on the shot clock. And then Rubio or Mitchell will drive or make a pass or something like, and maybe we missed that shot, but we've used most of the clock and we haven't turned the ball over.
Killing time.
Great. That's great. Minnesota, I don't trust them to not throw bad passes that lead to fast break dunks.
Bad passes, early shots. You know, yeah,
early shots coming down, you know, shooting a 3-pointer for no reason.
Yeah.
So that was just really frustrating because I was like, please beat the Rockets. And they were up so much. And the whole time I never felt safe, especially because Harden can come down and get a 3-point play anytime he wants.
Anybody on that Rockets team can make a 3-pointer, you know, except Capella, basically.
Yeah.
That's it. And so that's why I feel like no lead feels safe against the Rockets, just like no lead feels safe against
the Warriors.
Yeah.
It was fun to see Chris Paul foul out and basically get neutralized by Derrick Rose.
Do you think that you would like stage a boycott if LeBron went to the Rockets to be on a team with your most hated players?
No, I think that would be...
I'm just trying to, like, the players that I think you hate the most are Chris Paul and LeBron James.
Yeah, I probably hate them more than Harden.
Yeah, right. So, like, seeing those two guys on the same team.
That'd be fine.
You think, like, would that make them better? You think, would that make them feel better for you?
I don't know, because then the three of them, I mean, they're already, you know, people are like, well, they've clearly solved the, like, who shares the ball or who has the ball kind of thing. And it's like, I don't know if they've solved it.
They're just doing something.
They're doing something and it succeeded. This year specifically, I'm like, feeling more and more like the regular season just doesn't mean anything. because the playoffs are just different. You get schemed against in a way that, like, so the Rockets have rolled the entire year, but they haven't faced a team that's like game planning for them for a 7-game series in a row where they're focused on nothing but stopping them. And the fact that the two of them have shared the ball over the whole year hasn't really been under duress.
Okay.
So the thing you had said earlier about, like, we don't know that they're going to choke in the playoffs. We still don't have evidence that, they're that duo is like raising their game in the playoffs, and okay, we're 3 games in now.
We have one raised, Harden game. We have one raised Paul game and one game where they both were just fine.
Yeah.
Right. And they lost the game where they were both just fine.
Yeah.
Right. And they won both of the games where one of them raised their expectations.
Yeah. I mean, I would say even that Harden game is, I guess it is a raised game, but like, he's had games like that a lot.
That's a raised game. That's 45 points in the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's a raised game right there. That's like,
that's a raised game one. That's a good game 1 through 5 for Harden. Let's see him do it in a game 6.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, if it gets to 6,
what I'm saying is he had that game, but they still almost gave that game away.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they almost gave both of the first two games away.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the second game was a blowout.
And that's against an 8 seed.
Yeah. I was just thinking about how terrible how terrible Harden was on offense in game 2. This is a 2 for 18, something like that.
Yeah.
It was miserable. But Credit to him for not giving up and like playing defense. Apparently people were very happy about his defense. And like
in game two,
I couldn't tell if they were just like saying that to make him feel better, but it seems to me like it was.
I don't think the Timberwolves, I mean, it'll probably still be Rockins and five, because I don't actually think the Timberwolves can produce enough offense to win, because they shot insanely from the 3-point line last night.
Yeah.
And I don't think Derrick Rose is going to have another,
game where he does anything.
Yeah.
game where he's alive.
Yeah. It is funny that he's sort of celebrated for doing like an average game, but he hasn't produced much at all. So.
For a bench player who is bad to score 17 points in a playoff game, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool. It's just that when you frame it as former MVP Derrick Rose,
yeah,
then it's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Why is this happening?
It's just the narratives working themselves out.
Right. You know, if you accept him for what he truly is, which is a bad backup point guard.
Yeah. He has created this too, though.
Yeah.
Because of the way he talks about himself. He's never been like, well, I'm sure if you ask him, he'd be like, I'm still a starting point guard in this league.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%.
So
that's why he signed to be the starting point guard in Cleveland. You know, he was the starting point guard for that Cleveland team this year.
What was the thing that I saw that he played better than Clarkson? And somebody was like, there's a photo of LeBron.
Okay.
And it was like, Derrick Rose played better than Clarkson, and somebody else played better than... somebody else that was traded away.
Oh, played better than...
played better yesterday. A former... someone that was on the team.
Dwayne Wade.
Dwayne Wade. It was. Yeah, yeah.
Dwayne Wade had had an old man game. Shot 20 times and scored 20 points. Dwayne Wade lives completely inside the three-point line. He was taking threes with Cleveland this year because they do that. And then Pat Riley and Spoelstra were like, don't do that. Do not do that.
He's like an old Ben Simmons.
It's great. And I'm very happy because I think Dwayne Wade is cool because, I think everybody's cool. But I've loved watching him just like old man his way to some like buckets, some strong buckets.
Dwayne Wade, I think I haven't loved over his career. I hated that one Maverick series where like all the foul calls that he got.
That was a bummer.
But I think what happens is when people stay in the league long enough, I end up softening on them because they get old.
Yeah.
And then you see their humanity as they, you know.
And the reason you haven't softened on LeBron yet is because he's old, but he's not old enough to be bad yet.
Well, he's bad on one end of the court.
That was my way of trying to get you to say that LeBron is good.
No, he's good at the offensive end.
Okay.
He doesn't strike fear into hardly anybody on the defensive end anymore.
Just on those chase down blocks every blue moon. Hey, a blue moon happens every once a year. What's that? I don't know.
It's like that game was close when that play happened, and it was like, and he was level with, like he other players beat him down the court, while he just like sort of sulked.
You sent me a picture of the...
Yes, I screenshotted.
Playoff LeBron standing in the backcourt.
As the three-pointer swished through. Like, there was plenty of time. And also, if you watch that play again, Oladipo, like, fumbled the ball directly across where LeBron would have been if he had run.
Ooh.
Very close.
Yeah. And, hey,
also learned something that for kickballs...
Okay.
If the contact is inadvertent, it's not a kickball. That's why that wasn't a kickball.
Oh.
When Oladipo was dribbling, he dribbled it off his foot. That's not automatically a kickball.
Okay.
There has to be intent to...
to try to block. That's why it normally happens on defense.
That's why, they're sort of always assumed that a defender is wanting to kick it.
Got
so
it.
I believe that if like I was dribbling and I dribbled it off your foot, I don't think that's a kickball on you, even though you're on defense. It depends on what it looks like.
Is a kickball when you gather a tip-off and you kick it to yourself first? Is that a kickball?
That probably would be.
It's cool, though.
Did you watch I recently watched the Rondo does something weird on every tip-off.
Yeah, the headbutt.
Did he kick one? Oh, another thing.
I'm sure he has in the past.
It is also illegal to use your fist to hit the ball intentionally.
No way.
Someone should tell Lonzo... before he does another one of those fist passes that he did in summer league last year.
Yeah.
Remember that? It bounced and he like punched it up. That's
and it
illegal.
It looks so cool.
Yeah, it does look cool. That is illegal.
Why is cool stuff illegal?
Well, that's I don't actually understand what... I think maybe that's illegal because we don't want you swiping at the ball...
With your fist.
With your fist.
Yeah.
Near people's heads.
What about like a Jason Williams white chocolate elbow? Like
elbow pass. I think that's legal.
Okay. All right. Because we don't want people using their elbows. You know, Draymond got his first flagrant of the game in game two for elbowing... I forget who was
Bertans,
over his shoulder.
Probably.
I think it was
Bertans. Bertans is trying to start fights all over the place.
It was very funny because he was just on his back and Draymond was just like, get off of me. And he elbowed him in the face because, of course, that was a very, very funny.
Warrior Spurs. I don't think we need to talk.
We gotta get somebody. Cause you know, we know a lot of Warriors.
Well, our friend Zeke loves the Spurs, but I mean, they're not going to be around for much longer.
I mean, you know, maybe a season retrospective, you know, we can get to get some talking.
I just don't think they have any way of, I'd be surprised even now. I'll be surprised. Like before the series, I'd be like, they'll probably take one. Did you pick them to get swept?
I picked them to get swept. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say, like, I just don't, I think they're playing. Like, I don't think they have a lot of room to improve how they're playing.
Yeah, and, you know, with the, you know, very sad things that have happened to the Spurs, you know, with Popovich's wife passing away, you know, it's tough emotionally for them to get up, and they acknowledge that at the end of game three.
Atori's coaching game four as well.
Yeah. I feel like it's advantageous to the Warriors to lose game four. You know, the
to stretch out when the next series starts.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think it doesn't start until next Saturday anyway.
Even if it does start next Saturday, Curry's not playing game one on Saturday.
But what I mean is, if they lose if it goes to five games, won't it still start on Saturday?
I don't know.
I think it has to go to like six games for that start date to get pushed back.
Well, I will tell you this. I don't know. But if it can get delayed by losing one game in San Antonio, I think that, you know, that's not like, of course you want to win, you want to rest everybody. The chances of getting somebody injured in game five or a game six are probably higher than they would be in, you know,
well, they're higher than no if they were at home.
Yeah. But
I will say to your point, they're going home anyway.
Yeah.
So like it's either you win and you go home,
yeah,
or you win and you lose and you play one more game in your home court. Like it's not probably not that much of a difference for them.
Yeah.
A follow up on my LeBron prediction.
Okay.
Kawhi has to go somewhere else probably for that to happen.
So you're saying,
how do you feel about Kawhi to the Lakers?
Wow. I have no idea what we're going to trade for Kawhi. What do we have no long-term stuff on the books other than Luol Deng.
We trade every other person randomly. Just giving me
I'm doing a face where I'm just like,
can they do it if they move Ingram?
I don't want to move Ingram for Kawhi. And that, you know, I know I sound like an idiot.
I think I'm okay with moving Ingram.
But like, even then, like you still need, $15 million more dollars of salary to make that work. And like, are we going to take him into our cap
Rob
space?
Rob can make it work.
If I'm the Spurs, I have to be getting LeBron to back off of Kawhi, and then also Ingram, and then is there anything else that they would need?
Then is there
another first round pick,
three-way deal, maybe?
Well, because LeBron would have to opt into his contract and then
sign and
get
traded.
It's three-way sign and trades are so
we get Kawhi,
okay,
Jordan and Larry back.
Yeah. And we keep that first round pick that we got too. And then
that's right.
And we keep the cap space
and we get LeBron as well.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So the trade is that three players go to the Lakers. Uh-huh. One player goes to the Lakers and then another player goes to the Lakers.
Uh-huh.
And so the Lakers get five players and everybody else gets nobody. And
Cleveland gets Booby Gibson.
That's a fever dream trade right there.
And San Antonio.
San Antonio has Tim Duncan come out of retirement. Okay, yeah.
Oh, cool. So we're going to watch some more games today. We'll probably be back later this week.
Yeah.
Anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I that feels good.
Yeah. Seems like Bucks got this game in hand.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how fourth quarter Terry Rozier does, but doesn't seem like it's going to
I think our hero of this week is Drew Holiday.
Drew Holiday, hero of the week.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny because he's played so much better than anyone expected of him that the fact that Anthony Davis had a monster fucking series.
That's Yeah, you just almost, get punished almost, by your expectations.
It's
that way.
it's almost completely ignored how ridiculous Anthony Davis is.
Yeah.
Damn, right. Man, that's a bad man.
Let's all go think about that.
All right.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Catch you later.
Bye.